Yo, what's cracking? This your homeboy Ice Cube, and you tuned in to Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. You know what it is, baby.
Hey, everybody, this is Mike with the Mountain Weekly News. Welcome back to episode number 45 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. This week's podcast is being brought to you by Kemper Snowboards. Kemper Snowboards are back. They've got some sick-ass shapes. We've been testing their split boards. Super psyched on what's going on. I think they've got some bindings coming out. They've got some wild colors, the throwback. If you've been around the snowboard game for a minute, you know of Kemper Snowboards, so be sure to check them out. This week's special guest is Atle Emberget. Atle Emberget is one of the founders of Sweet Protection. Sweet Protection is the manufacturer of some badass helmets, goggles, outerwear, all sorts of cool stuff for God, everything from kayak to ski, snowboard, mountain bike. We'll let Atle take it from here. Atle, welcome to Jackson, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about your background. What are you guys doing, first of all, with Sweet Protection?
All right, background first. I grew up in a mountain town in Norway, basically called Trysil. Small, remote mountain town. Similar to Jackson, but it's even smaller. Founded the company with a group of friends in 2000. And we're doing helmets, protection, eyewear, and apparel for our core activities, which is ski, snowboard, mountain biking or bike, and then paddle sports.
And what was the idea? Did you guys not like the way helmets were fitting or the goggles? Like, was there a need for kind of a new brand to come out?
I like to say that the company or the brand was founded on frustration of not finding the products that we wanted. So this is back like late 90s, right? And we honestly didn't find the products that we felt had the style and matched the function that we wanted out of the products. So we basically founded it to do better. I mean, the dream and the wish was to make products that are more specific and better towards our target users. And that's what we're still doing, or that's what we're trying to do.
That's a very organic backstory. And that's actually very similar to Patagonia. You know, Yvon Chouinard was a climber. The climbing gear just wasn't up to par, started making gear, his friends started wanting it. And then all of a sudden it branched out. And you can really see that in their gear, because like you said, you're building stuff for yourself and for the sports that you guys do. Did you guys have a kayak background? Was that kind of the original helmets? Because, you know, it's interesting when I go on the website, I can understand ski and snow and then into the bike category. Kayak kind of seems like a different thing altogether.
That's a good question. I mean, Trysil, where we grew up, is as far away from the ocean as you can get. Our dream was to surf. So like the action sport culture, like the California, like that was our dream, basically. But the kayaks back then, they were like round. There's no way you can surf. So we basically started getting into like carbon fiber, composites, glass fiber, like basically making our own kayaks based out of a surfboard, because that was our surf. So that's maybe how we got into paddle sports in the first place. And we have a lot of rivers and creeks that go wild in spring. So that's kind of that's the kayaking background.
And do you feel a lot of people, the community you grew up in, they kayak in the winter, they do the snow sports in the summer there, you know, maybe mountain biking. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of crossover within the athletes and the users in those groups.
I feel the same as you. There's a lot of crossover, and I feel that the attitude and the joy and love of the activity is the same. The kayak scene is super small. I mean, you almost know everyone, right? But it's also, if you can make a product that works and lasts on the river, you've got a good recipe. I mean, you're onto something, basically.
Okay, so I got a new helmet here that you guys brought. First thing I'll say, just looking at it, is this looks like the kind of helmet that if I was designing helmets that I would design or I would wear. A lot of times, you know, helmets do look goofy. You know, they're really big off the top or the earmuffs. I mean, this is incredibly streamlined. Let's start with, first of all, what is the helmet? And if you could talk about MIPS, why you guys have used MIPS. I think from the start when we reviewed your helmet, they've always had MIPS, or at least in the last 4 or 5 years. I think that the MIPS is something that our audience probably doesn't know enough about. So if you could kind of give them a little rundown on that.
I can try. So the helmet you're holding is the Ascender MIPS, which is basically a ski touring / ski mountaineering helmet. So it's triple certified, focusing on doing both the ski snowboard certifications, but it's also the climbing mountaineering standard, which is a hard one. Low volume, important, so it's easy, packable in your backpack going up. And I mean, you should wear a helmet if it gets, you know, steeper or more challenging, but it's easy to pack. It's very much focused on ventilation, but the volume and weight is important for it. And then when it comes to MIPS, so MIPS is founded out of Stockholm, Sweden. We started working with them basically from the beginning, and MIPS deals with rotational forces. So the easiest way to explain MIPS is the layer that is implemented into the helmet allows the helmet to slightly rotate on your head. We're talking like the 1 to 5 milliseconds of impact. And this rotation will basically reduce the rotational forces onto your brain and your head. The rotational forces are what gives you a concussion. It's basically the most normal injury that you get from a ski or snowboarding accident. So MIPS basically reduces the risk of getting a concussion or a even more severe head injury. That's the easiest way of explaining it.
For sure. And a lot of times, like even like on a cat track, if somebody catches an edge and like falls backwards, that rotation, and it's not necessarily always just front to back.
I would say there's always rotation involved. And basically what MIPS does is to deal with that rotation, so to reduce the rotational forces to your brain.
What do you say to people that don't wear helmets? Sometimes in the backcountry, you know, there's been days where I either forget my helmet or, to be honest, the volume of this helmet, it looks to be about 6 inches tall. I'll get the tape measure out here, but compared to, you know, a helmet that, you know, maybe it's just a little bulkier, having it on your pack, it becomes a little harder to deal with. At the resort, it seems like they're becoming pretty common, you know, not only on mountain employees, but, you know, the users, because it does seem like there is more opportunities at a resort to come in impact. How do you explain to your friends, like, if they weren't wearing a helmet, what would you say?
I'm not the one that should, you know, point any fingers here, but it's, I mean, we started the brand and our wish was to make products that you wanted to use and that had the function and style that we were looking for. And volume is important when it comes to helmets, but the safety aspect is for sure the most important. But there's always like this collar style. It has to fit your personality, right?
Yeah, because this is like a cool, like, what do you call that? Like a baby blue. I mean, I'm going to wear this helmet. And my friends a lot of times give me shit. And I've had 2 very close friends die snowboarding, professional athletes, could have been saved if they were wearing a helmet, you know, hit little rocks. I much rather would wear a helmet, and to find something that fits and that it is within your style, that's got to be a huge selling point too.
Yeah, and I mean, the safety aspect is important. I mean, if you want to rely on luck, like not hitting a rock or not being like, you know, I mean, don't wear a helmet. But I mean, if you want to like have fun without thinking about the consequences or knowing that you're safer if you should have an accident. But also, like, goggles will work better. I mean, you have a better functioning kit, basically, because your goggles won't fog up as much. They will basically function better, and you're more protected. And I also think there's a lot of helmets out there now that looks way, way better. And there's a lot of different styles and different, you know, you can find what you like. And I just think it doesn't make any sense to not use a helmet.
Well, and especially the fact that you guys make goggles as well, because that manufacturer helmet goggle connection, you know, like Smith for a long time has been known for that. It's kind of like Burton, like the Burton binding and the Burton boot is probably going to work a little better than any other boot that's in there. And so the fact that you have that goggle line and, you know, you're not going to have the huge gaper gap. I mean, it's a real nice, you know, streamlined look.
Yep. No, I mean, function is important. And, you know, our goggles and helmets are designed together. And I mean, everything from like ventilation, I mean, you just have a better functioning goggle if you wear a helmet. So again, I mean, all my friends wear helmets, and I think that I would say something if someone was coming along without a helmet. But at the same time, I don't want to be the one that point fingers, but I just don't see any reason for not wearing one. And helmets are, I mean, looking only like 5 years back, there's been a lot of development, and everyone should wear a helmet, basically. And we should be good, you know, I'm getting old, right? And I'd like to be a good role model as well. And like, if the kids see their heroes not wearing a helmet, you know, that's something to think about as well.
Yeah, and the ski and snowboard industry fought with that for a long time, because there used to be a thing where basically the photos weren't getting published. If the guy was wearing a helmet, it wasn't cool. But I think now it's more, if you see people not wearing a helmet, it stands out more than, you know, somebody wearing a helmet. And especially kind of being ambassadors. You guys are here in Jackson Hole. You've got a big announcement that's happening. What's going on with Sweet Protection and Jackson Hole Mountain Resort?
You know, it's... We started the company out of a small mountain ski resort in Norway. We love product testing. We love trying to make the products better every single day. The North American markets are important to us, and we are now doing a serious push to, you know, get more brand awareness, hopefully get some preference in our core audience. And I'm very proud that we have just signed a 2-year agreement with Jackson Hole Mountain Resort, being their official helmet and eyewear partner. And we will not like push helmets and eyewear onto everyone on the mountain. We would like them to discover that we do make good products. We're maybe going about this in a different way, but I really hope to see more Sweet Protection on the mountain in the seasons to come. And this is our first year. And we're doing summer and winter, and we do like mountain bike products as well. Same categories. So I just think that the full Jackson experience seems to be an extremely, extremely good match to the brand and our DNA and what we would like to do. And I think this is also an excellent way of us to make even better products. I mean, we did our own lens technology, and our lens technology is basically made for the challenging conditions. That is our rig lens technology. And we made that for challenging, like Norwegian, I mean, we have a lot of challenging light conditions, basically. And I was up on the mountain yesterday, and I could see that you have a bit of the same.
Yeah, especially if you're going, you know, when the mountain is open top to bottom, at 10,000 feet, it's very different than 6,000 feet, you know, or even in the Northwest, Mount Baker, you hit that fog line or the rain line, and it's, you know, so with your goggles, like, what would be the most universal, or how does that work with rig? Is it able to kind of adapt with the changing conditions?
It doesn't adapt. We focused on 3 different very important aspects. So it's increased contrast, which is very important. And it's our lenses. We're trying to have as natural color perception as possible. So we don't want to color the world like blue or pink or red. So everything should be as natural as possible. And then we also, in our lens, try to reduce the intensity to your eye. You can ride longer without getting tired and tense, basically. And I mean, I've had some of my best days on the mountain in really shitty light conditions. And if you were always to ride when it's, you know, a sunny bluebird day, I mean, you're missing out on a lot. Basically.
For sure. My favorite riding and even touring is storm days. I mean, I love nothing more. Even the big avalanche days, like, let me go out there in the nasty of the nasty. But then at that point, your optics, I mean, it's a very overlooked thing. I mean, I have friends where I see them wiping the inside of their lens. Is that a good way to just screw up your goggle? Or,
I mean,
I always cringe when I see it, or I see people with the goggle on top of their helmet when they're touring, and I'm like, huh, that looks like it's gonna...
You should be careful, like, cleaning your, you know, the inside lens. There's basically 2 reasons. One is that the lens is, it doesn't take a lot of scratching or damage before it gets really damaged, so that it basically affects your visibility. But the main factor is that it's very easy to polish off the anti-fog treatment.
Oh, I didn't realize that's what was happening.
The anti-fog part might be the most important part, but the inner lens is also way more sensitive. It's softer, and it doesn't have like the same construction as your outside lens. So that's why you should be more careful. But I mean, the outside lens is the most important, because that's where you have the technology. That's where you can control the spectrum of the light coming through the lens. And that's where you can kind of play with how you can create a lens that will allow you to see better, basically.
goggles under the helmet or over the helmet for the strap? And does it matter performance-wise, safety-wise? I run under.
You know, I believe there's an age limit of having the goggle under a helmet.
Oh, okay. What's that age limit?
No, you know, I'm way too old. And I also think that if you have, like, the first time you fall on your buckle inside or having the goggle inside of your helmet.
Didn't think about it, though.
You will realize that this was a really stupid idea.
Because I'm looking at your helmet right now, and it doesn't have anything to mount to the inside, but there's definitely these slots are for the strap of the goggle for the outside.
But, I mean, it's a style thing, right? And again, I shouldn't point fingers, but it's if you have a huge goggle strap and there's buckles on the strap, right? And if you were to have a hard hit on that buckle, you basically bring your own personal rock to fall on, you know, which is the helmet will not be able to protect you as good, basically.
Hell, I've done that with a belt buckle, putting just a standard belt buckle on, taking a weird fall and being like, I'm never doing that again. That was stupid.
Yeah, but it's a style thing. I don't use air pads on my helmet, but I always have my goggles on the outside. And the age thing is, you know, kind of a joke, but it's a style preference, I think.
All my friends, I'm 41 and everyone gives me shit. They're like, really, bro? This is how you're running it? And I run the beanie underneath, and it is. It's a very, it was that, you know, Danny Davis and all those kids. And I was like, okay, that's just, I like it.
And then it's also a difference of actually wearing a helmet and like bringing a helmet. So a helmet should fit, right? So a helmet, so this is kind of the dorky part, but it's a helmet will never be able to do its job if it doesn't fit. So if you have like this huge gaper gap, or if you have a helmet that's way too big, it will help, but it won't be able to protect you as intended.
For sure. If somebody's touring, do you recommend, I mean, this is streamlined, like we talked about, like this could easily go in the pack inside, it could go on the outside in the little sleeve. Is that kind of the best practice that you think if they're in, you know, not steep terrain, not anything that they would need, you know, the ice or the mixed rock? I see people touring with their helmet all the time and I just think, God, that looks so heavy and so hot. Or are they able to kind of regulate temperature? Is it, I mean, I'm a baseball cap and sunglasses guy.
Yeah, I'm the same. But if it gets technical, if it gets steep, I will always wear a helmet, always going up as well. But I mean, having a low volume, very packable helmet makes it so much easier to just have it in your backpack or outside of the backpack. So that's why I normally always bring a thin beanie or a cap. And depending on the temperature and weather, I probably do more hiking up wearing a cap or a beanie. But as soon as it gets technical or steeper or every, like all the time going down again, I always put the helmet on.
Yeah. Yeah, you feel naked without it. And I rode for many years with my helmet, and it would be a panicked feeling if I got somewhere else. Like, oh my God, what am I going to do?
For me, it's a natural part of the equipment, right? So something is missing or something is wrong if I don't have the helmet. So it's, you know, personal preference again.
How about yourself? You're a snowboarder, splitboarder? What do you like to surf? What's kind of your cup of tea?
You know, I grew up skiing. Never went to kindergarten. My mother started the first ski school back home. So I was basically let loose on the mountain from the age of 3, probably. I did alpine skiing. I did a lot of telemark skiing. I found that to be more fun, like more free. But I've always snowboarded as well. And now I probably ski when the conditions are bad and I snowboard when it's good. And I almost always splitboard. I don't like do ski touring. So I have a few different setups, but I probably snowboard 80-90%. I only ski when it's bad, basically. Yeah. Icy, hard, crappy.
I like that you mentioned tele skiing. I splitboard 100%. I mean, if I'm at the resort, it's maybe 2-3 days a year. If I'm traveling somewhere, my backcountry partner, he's 75 years old, put in most of the routes here. He's on tele skis, old leather boots, and just to watch his turns, it's when I see a tele skier making a real turn, it's closer to surfing than any snowboarder, because you just see that, like, they're so in it, and the movement is just, a lot of times the terrain that we ride is so up and down that I get to the top and I'm like, I don't know if I want to mount my board because I'm gonna have to just go into transition mode. So now I'm freehealing and riding out, and it's so fun. I'm like, this is like a whole new, I'm like, so maybe I do start skiing again, or just, yeah. I think it'll probably be some sort of a tele setup. But there's days I've gone back and found mellow powder runs and just been like, I just want to ski this. And I get to the bottom and I'm like, oh my God, I was so sick. Where, you know, maybe I wouldn't have the same stoke. But how about avalanche education? Where do you, are you Norway? I mean, are you riding Furberg? What's kind of the boards that people are using out there?
I mean, we have a big touring, it's growing basically. It's a big thing. Normally later season, but I mean, we see all the snowbirds, so it's, again, down to preference. My touring season normally starts in, like, February, because early season it's too icy. Like, the snowpack is not, you know, ideal. And I always tour for the fun part, which is going down. That's probably why I snowboard more as well, because if you only count the really good days, I always have the better days on the snowboard.
Well, when you talked about touring, like if I get somewhere that I need crampons, I just turn around. I'm like, you know, if it's this kind of, and even at first, the whole splitboarding was the ice axe and the mountaineering. And I talked to all those guys and they're like, I don't want to be in terrain like that. It's fucking horrible. Because you know, as you're going up, if you're hitting that, that's what you're going to ride down. Like, uh-uh. Because we're there for the ride down. Sure, the exercise is incredible. But like if I wasn't getting that endorphin hits, it would be very different.
That's also why I rather bring a heavier kit going up to have more fun going down.
For sure.
That said, you know, we do try to make our helmets as safe as possible, but there's always that impossible balance of compromise, right? That's the tricky part of making a helmet, because you can always make a helmet safer by adding volume.
Right. Two steps forward, one step back type of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. You have the safest helmet, this new tech, nobody's want to wear it. Or when you do, it's, you know, you do something to the helmets, you feel top heavy. I mean, I'm just like, whoa, what is going on here? You know, and that's...
But that's also why we early started experimenting and working with carbon fiber. A lot of technologies, materials that will allow us to reduce the volume without compromising on performance. Because again, the most important part of a helmet is the performance, like how well it will protect you if you are, or when you are unlucky, right?
If you take a fall with your helmet and you actually hit something, what happens to the helmet at that point? Does that helmet need to be retired? Is there a certain, you know, is this a tricky thing to talk about?
First of all, I can say that there's no such thing as a multi-impact helmet.
Okay, I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, the ones that are saying that they have multi-impact helmets, they...
With MIPS, when I first saw it, it almost seemed like there was a little bit of like a gel or something that wasn't completely rigid. And so if that gets activated, would that work again that second time? Or has it kind of, something's come out or something's been...
MIPS is not the biggest challenge here. I mean, every single helmet in the world is made out of destructible materials. So the basic principle is that when the energy is big enough, the helmet is partially deformed.
Interesting.
Right? And when something is deformed, you know that if you have the same hit or if you have a hit on the same area, the helmet will never be able to protect you as well as intended.
And you see people with the dings in their helmet. I mean, very noticeable. And you're like, okay.
It basically means that area is punctured. That area will not be able to protect you as intended.
The helmet did its job at first, being not a destructible plastic, but now you've weakened and you've, you know.
So... if you take care of your helmet and know what energy damage it's gotten, I mean, we're saying that you should consider changing your helmet every 2 to 3 years.
Cool, I've never heard that.
But if you are a keen skier or snowboarder, I would say that you should change it every single season.
I mean, people do that with their jackets.
If you travel with a helmet in a bag, I mean, I wouldn't even do that. If you stick your helmet with your ski and snowboard, like traveling, you know that your helmet will get a lot of damage.
Just throwing it in your board bag type of thing. That's what I did when I went to Alaska. Yeah. And so what would be a better way to have it like on you, like on your backpack, like as a carry-on, or
pack it like in your bag together with
clothes and exactly.
Or you could buy like a hard case. We sell hard cases, which are basically made to protect your helmet while traveling, and you can have like all your stash, like gloves, extra lenses, goggles, like in the same pack, basically.
Protection for your head.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, I throw it in the back of my Bronco. I mean, I've never thought twice of it. I'm like, well, if I'm going to wear the helmet, I'm wearing the helmet.
This is a tricky conversation. So it's like when you've had concussion or when you know that you've had a hard hit, I normally say that you should consider changing your helmet because it's most likely damaged in the area where you had the hit. And if you are unlucky having a hit in the same area, you know that the helmet will not be able to protect you as well. And that's also why we have a crash replacement. I'm not sure if that's something everyone is doing, but we actually do offer crash replacement on all our helmets.
Okay, so if I take a fall, I feel like I got concussed. I mean, I hit hard. I know people, they know. What's that next step? Contact sweep protection, go to the shop.
Maybe I said too much. So we do have a crash replacement program, and we ask our dealers to take part of it, which basically means if you go into a store that sells our products, we ask them to give you a 40% discount. And then if the shop then contacts us, we will make sure that they are not paying for that extra discount. Right. So we will basically refund that helmet to the store. Right. And that's a way of communicating safety and being responsible and making sure that people replace their helmets more often than what I think they're doing.
Could this helmet work for riding bicycles, or does that become a different certification for mountain bike and cycling?
So the helmet we're looking at would probably pass the bike certification or the bike standard, but that specific helmet does not have that certification because we haven't paid for it, basically.
Their bike helmets could be similar technology, maybe a little different design with, I mean, if you were to go after that, you could.
The other way is a no-go. You would never, or I shouldn't say never. I don't think there's
bike helmets that would work for snow.
There's not a, if any, right. There's very few bike helmets that would pass the ski snowboard certification requirements. But the other way is doable.
At what point do helmets, is there a certain like speed or a certain amount of force that don't, you know, like we see with airbags, people are like, oh, I'll go ski avalanche terrain now. I'm like, don't do that. Like, you don't want to have to use the airbag. You don't want to get caught in an avalanche. Is there, you know, just a certain speed or, you know, I mean, I see the guys in the pipe going, you know, 10, 15, 20 feet out. And I'm thinking, God, if you decked right now, I mean, that's.
This is complicated, right? Because you can go super slow and you can fall hard. And you can be very unlucky and you can hit something. So there's a lot of parameters that you cannot control that will affect the energy that is submitted to the helmet. So that's another reason for always wearing a helmet, because I've had friends had really bad accidents on places where it shouldn't be possible, basically. Yeah, so that's a hard question, but It's not about speed. It's more like the energy, the angles, your weight behind, or like how you fall. So there's a lot of factors in this picture.
When you mentioned a good fit, you know, if you take that front whiplash and your helmet has that ability to come down, I mean, I don't see that being.
Nope.
It's not giving the helmet the chance to do what it's meant to do.
Nope.
Like, yeah, you're wearing a helmet. Cool. I think seeing the ski patrol start to adopt helmets over the last 5-10 years across the country, that was massive. And I know there was a lot of pushback. I mean, those guys are old school and you got guys that have been doing this for a long time. But then you start seeing the guides wearing it, and then you start seeing the instructors wearing it. And some of the resorts do have a policy, but then as a consumer, as somebody that's going on vacation, if you notice that every other person, your ski instructor, the ski patrol, everybody's wearing helmets, at a certain point you're like, wait a second, what am I doing wrong? And then to start seeing sweep protection, because it really isn't a brand that I see as much of, you know, like even when we reviewed it, people were like, oh, cool, like this stuff looks sweet, but like, And again, like just to use the word sweet, I love that it feels natural. I mean, you guys, it's not just, you know, some random kooks that were like, oh, let's just get into making, you know, outdoor stuff. And, you know, action sports is hot right now. You're actually our participant, which makes a difference.
Yeah. Grew up skiing and snowboarding and biking and kayaking, basically. And I mean, do you say that we started the brand because the frustration of not finding products, but maybe equally important or more important was the fact that we wanted to take part and kind of continue doing what we did, right? I mean, I still like to mountain bike as much as possible. I still use my snowboard and my skis as much as possible. And I think I'm happy and fortunate to be able to do that. And, you know, from Trysil, Norway to Jackson Hole, it's, yeah, this partnership, I just, there's something really great in this mix that I love.
And Jackson's hot right now, and it's popular, and, you know, you get the right people wearing that stuff, and then the tourists go home, and now all of a sudden that's what they're wearing, and it's, you know, you have all these little on-mountain ambassadors running around for you, and then that slowly grows within the community. It's like, oh, check out these, you know, it's something different.
I'd like us to convince them. I'd like us to, like, I don't want them to wear our products because someone told them they had to. I would like them to choose our products because they truly believe it's the best.
Right.
And
versus like some of the resorts did that with outerwear a few years ago, and it was like, okay, you're forced to wear this, and then the outerwear was crap, and you had all these employees standing around getting cold and just pissed off, and it's like, this is their sponsorship.
Yeah. Back to helmets. I don't think I know a single person that have done the transition from not wearing a helmet to wearing a helmet and looking back, like saying like, what was I doing? Like, what's, you know, this is much better, because it really becomes a natural part of your kit, and there's functional, you know, things work better when you wear a helmet, basically, like talking about the goggles.
Okay, so we've got helmets, we've got goggles. You're wearing, are these prescription glasses? What else? I mean, what else? I see glass. Okay, tell us about that.
I mean, the ones I'm wearing are normal sunnies, but you can pop the lens and you do prescriptions in them, basically. So that's what I'm doing. But we do have a small collection of sports performance as well. And we do like casual fashion, whatever, eyewear as well. But the most important part is the goggles and the lens technology. Helmets, we've talked about. And we do also...
Do you put similar lens technology in your sunglasses? Or...
Yeah.
Okay.
Always the same. Always the same. Yep.
Interesting. Yep. Okay.
And we do also do apparel, like technical outerwear.
I noticed some stuff on the website, some jackets. Yep. Is that kind of new for you guys?
No, we've been doing it since almost day one. But entering into a new market, we would like to focus. We would like to do things properly. And we always start and focus hardware, like helmets and eyewear. So our outerwear, it's available. But it's very selected and not something we are focusing on, basically, because, yeah, again, we'd like to make sure that we are putting all our focus and resources behind the helmets and eyewear.
What are some of your biggest markets? Like, is it, if I go to Norway, is that where you're going to like be like, oh, man, or like, is there a Northwest? Yeah. Okay.
You'll probably see as many sweet helmets in Norway as you see, like, Smith or Gyro here. We're visible.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I mean, we've been doing whole market for 20 years. I mean, we had our first helmets out 2002, 2003, and we haven't really focused hard on any like international markets before now, the last few years. And now we would really, really like to do better in US.
Well, I like that you guys are here in the partnership with Jackson. I mean, sometimes it is hard for those European brands to branch into the US, or sometimes with the outerwear, it's just a little different style. And it's like, oh, that's over everybody's heads. Or Plume came to the trade show and their stuff was so light years ahead of everyone. It was like, oh, we don't understand this. It's like, yeah, that's what you guys are doing in Europe. It's a whole different level of...
But another aspect of what I like about this Jackson partnership is also the people, right? It's a mountain town that's the same kind of vibe as we're used to. And there's a lot of good people that we're dealing with and talking to. And there's a lot of dedicated staff on the mountain, talking like mountain guides, ski patrollers. And that's the scene that I think we need to, you know, develop products, have fun, and then, you know, do better, basically.
And one of the reasons this website does well and this podcast is the brands are like, hey, if this gear works in Jackson and in the Tetons, it's going to work wherever. And they market that. It's like, look, these guys are out testing it in the nastiest of the nasty. And so if all of a sudden sweet protection becomes that standard, I typically ride with a second set of goggles in my bag, just, you know, second set of gloves. I like to be out there. Usually what happens is somebody else will fall and, or fog up their goggles. And I'm like, here, you want to wear these? And they're like, what do you, how'd you know? I'm like, it doesn't take up much space. Like, been there, done that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I normally bring a spare lens. That's what I'm doing.
And how do you carry a spare lens? Like in your like jacket, inside the pack?
I normally just have it protected in my backpack. I normally have it like in the bag we get when you buy a spare lens. And I normally just make sure that it's protected, like in an extra piece of base layer or like something protected. And then
inside the bag and then inside a second thing?
Yeah. I mean, just to make sure that it doesn't get, you know.
I mean, heck, you founded this and you're talking about protecting your helmet, protecting your goggles, protecting your lenses, even just that little extra. It's like, again, why not? This is the stuff that your eyewear, you know, that's going to protect you being able to see, you know, your helmet. How about speaking of protection, if something impacts the lens of the goggle, is there different certifications for that? I know I went to the Oakley factory 15 years ago and they were shooting bullets at the lenses or BBs. And I was like, what? But that seemed more for guys working, you know, construction somewhere. And it's like, oh, these are certified for, you know, our sunglasses.
You know, it's kind of an extension of your helmet. So it kind of makes sense that it can take some damage. But the most important part is that it shouldn't break and it shouldn't splinter, right? Because that's really, really dangerous. So our premium lenses are 2.8 millimeter thick, which is... A normal lens is probably like 1.2, 1.3, 1.4. So our lenses are thicker, so they do take more damage, or they can take more damage. But we also make our lenses thicker to control the properties of the lens. Because the distortion, the worst eyewear salesman, he would basically show you how flexible the lens is. Because that's not something you want. That's the worst. Because if a lens is doing that on your face, you basically have distortion. And distortion is not something you want.
That makes sense. Anytime you turn, just look, I mean, anything. It's just got this weird, you know, torsional rotation or whatever.
And most lenses also have, like most goggles have two lenses, right? And when something is moving, you have the distance between the two lenses will vary. And that's also when you get distortion, and that's when your brain will trick you to think that something is closer, or you basically see things wrong. So the distortion is something you don't want. And that's also why we have like a gore vent in our most premium goggles. So there's actually a vent, like in all Volvo cars, the headlamps have a small vent that uses the gore membrane to equalize pressure.
Interesting, because my Subaru headlamps fog up all the time.
Yeah, why a Volvo?
No, this makes sense. I mean, this is like, oh, this has happened. Let's get out in front of this.
So yeah, the vent will breathe. But the most important fact of the vent that we are using in our goggles is that it equalizes the pressure between the inner and outer lens. So when you start from the base and you go all the way up, you will have pressure, right? And this pressure will basically... pressure the two lenses to move towards each other, or maybe the other way. And that's when you have distortion again. So it's basically to control the perfect, not the perfect, but to control the properties of the lens.
So it's a Gore-Tex vent.
Yep.
Interesting. Yep. So the goggles come with a little thing that says Gore-Tex, like a little label at all? Or?
Yeah, it's a well-hidden piece of tech.
I haven't heard of this before in the industry, and maybe I just haven't been paying attention. I didn't know. I mean, I know Gore is in all sorts of other stuff.
I think we're the first ones using a Gore vent in ski goggles. It's basically in our premium models only.
And what's the price point on that? Like under $300?
Yeah, for sure. Starting just above $200, $219, I think.
Okay.
And our best lenses are also always toric. So our premium lens is like a toric lens, 2.8 millimeter thick, with our rig lens technology, and then the Gore vent.
I'm sure you just sold all of our listeners on sweep protection. I mean, the helmets, the goggles, and we can stand behind that because we've tested it. We used it at the resort. Our guy was a ski instructor. I mean, I'll show you the articles we did, and he's jibbing. He's fully putting it, you know, in the backcountry. Loved it. Now I see the design. I mean, it's streamlined. I like the way the goggles look. Where can people find your stuff right now?
Good question. We're in dialogue with a few dealers here right now. So we're hoping to be up at the village, like close to the resort this winter. No promises yet because, again, it's, you know, they need space. They need to have the budgets. We're late to the game and there's a lot of, you know, factors here. But I mean, we're selling through quite a few dealers in US. So we do have a dealer locator on our website. So you should be able to find a sweet product pretty close to where you are based.
And it's sweet, like actually like sweet surf term, not, you know, as in taste. So SWEETProtection.com.
Yeah.
And again, where did the name sweet come from? I don't know if we covered that. I'm so interested in this. Again, you know, like rad bikes that came out. I was like, really? You called it rad bikes? Like, well done, you know?
No, I mean, sweet comes from, you know, that feeling or that when you're searching for the expression that you just felt. It's, you know, skate, surf, you know, action sports maybe. And this was a term that was used a lot when we grew up again, like, We got a lot of our inspiration from, you know, the action sport culture, like magazines and movies, basically. And we wanted to call the company only Sweet. Young and stupid, we thought that would
just be straight Sweet. Like, this company is sweet.
Yep. And someone basically told us, are you stupid? You cannot, like, protect or do any like trademarking on Sweet alone. So we basically had to come up with a new name, and that's when Protection came in. So that's why it's been Sweet Protection since May 24th in 2000.
Awesome. Well, you guys are gonna be hearing a lot about this brand in the future. The stuff looks rad. I'll put up a review here as soon as we get some snow. Probably be a couple weeks before that happens, but it'll come. How's Europe right now? Are you guys starting to get some snow this winter? I know it's either hit or miss for you guys. It's like, oh, it's the year to go to Europe, or they have no snow.
Areas are getting a solid snowpack already. I've seen some pictures and videos from some friends already. Up north, it's been too cold, but down in the Alps, I'm seeing some very nice conditions already. So fingers crossed for a solid good season.
Cool. Last but not least, if somebody wanted to come out to Norway and shred, is there anywhere they should check out, like a first-time spot? For me, I have no idea. I've seen some touring stuff that you guys do, but where should, without maybe blowing up your secret spots, is there anywhere that if somebody wants to take a vacation this year? And
I mean, we have a lot of nice areas. I mean, I should, of course, mention our base, Trysil, which is 2 hours north of Oslo. But I mean, maybe the part that Norway is the most unique part is maybe the ski, snowboard, touring, splitboarding that goes on up north, like late season. So we're talking mid-March to early May. That would be maybe some of the most scenic and beautiful and nice riding, skiing you can do.
Cool. Yeah, I've seen some like guided trips and some things. And it seems like you said, you know, it's a 7-day and it's, you know, April or early May and, you know, get out there and yeah, nicer weather and things have settled down. They're not quite as icy. And
Bring extra money because a beer is $10.
A beer is $10.
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Okay, I know I said last but not least. Has the supply chain issue affected you guys at all? Are you, you know, I have a friend in California who's got 7,000 wetsuits sitting off the coast for, you know, Buell wetsuits, and they can't. They have dealers and they've just don't know what to do. Are you guys doing okay in that regard?
We're affected, but I would say that we're doing good. We're more affected because of the logistics, like containers and ships and, you know, huge challenges on in and out of ports. Our factories and our production lines, we kind of tried to speed up things early. And we also decided to spend some extra money on actually flying things in to have that extra buffer. We might have been lucky on that because we have most of our products delivered already, which is a very nice position to be in.
Awesome. Congrats on that. Way to be proactive, for sure.
I mean, I hope this will get better. And I mean, flying stuff in is not the way forward.
I've heard of a few brands chartering, you know, big planes, and I can only imagine the cost on that. I mean, it's obviously losing, but they've got dealers and they have orders. And it's like, okay, let's build, continue these relationships.
And I think we should respect the sustainable aspect of it as well. I mean, I hope this will get better soon so it's we can go back to the more normal timelines and more sustainable way of getting products to the shelves.
Well, right on, man. I appreciate you jumping on the show. This was fun. And hopefully you can come back to Jackson sometime when it's going off and we can go tour. And if I make it out to Norway one of these days, I'll be sure to hit you up. And it's cool to hear that there is a big split board and ski touring scene over there. And I think a lot of time people here in North America, it's just not on our radar. And until you've gone over there, I mean, I've traveled all over the world. I've yet to do Europe in the winter. And, you know, people go to Japan and they go to Alaska and all these other places.
No, we have some super, super nice areas for sure. And I'll be back in February. Kingston, Queens, basically.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, game on. We'll go tour one of those days.
Love to.
Sweet. Thanks again, man. Appreciate
it. Yep. Thank you.
All right. Well, that was a great interview with Atle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Again, episode number 45 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast being brought to you by Kemper Snowboards this week. Really stoked on what these guys are doing. For more information, be sure to check out Kemper Snowboards because, they're killing it. Kemper-snowboards.com.